Daung San Suu Kyi is the chairperson of the National League for Democracy in Burma. Suu Kyi served nearly 15 years under house arrest for challenging Burma's political system and is considered an international symbol for the struggle for freedom of Burmese people. Tomorrow, November 12th, will mark the two-year anniversary of Suu Kyi's release from house arrest. Earlier this fall, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi presented Suu Kyi with an honorary doctorate award from the University of San Francisco before Suu Kyi led a town hall meeting for the Bay Area Burmese community. We should note that the Bay Area has the highest Burmese population in the United States. Let's listen in.
5 years ago, the monasteries of Buddhist monks in Burma were being raided and looted. Monks were being detained and killed. Military officials were defecting, and the country's largest peaceful demonstrations were taking place with over 30,000 protesters led by 1,000 monks. The demands of the people included lower commodity prices, national reconciliation, and the immediate release of Aung San Suu Kyi and all political prisoners. 3 months later, in December 2007, the university here honored those courageous, self-sacrificing Burmese monks. And today, we are deeply moved again to shine a ray of light on Burma and to have in our presence the woman who personifies the determination of the Burmese people to be free, and who also serves for all of us as a universal symbol of the power and moral force of nonviolent actions for effecting change and altering the course of history. The University of San Francisco is proud to honor Daung San Suu Kyi for her courage, her personal sacrifices, and her unshakable commitment to the pursuit of freedom for the people of Burma. The university does therefore confer upon Daung San Suu Kyi the degree of Doctor of Human Letters, honoris causa, with all the rights and privileges contained therein.
You just heard former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi presenting Burmese political activist Daung San Suu Kyi with an honorary doctorate degree. Now let's listen in to Daung San Suu Kyi's acceptance speech.
First, I would like to say a few words of thanks in English for all those in San Francisco who have been so welcoming to me and the people of my country. After that, if you don't mind, I would like to speak in Burmese because I do not want our people here to forget their roots, to forget their own language, to forget the needs of their country. Those of my generation here will know that I have come to San Francisco in the right way, with flowers in my hair. The younger generation probably do not know what I'm talking about at all. And of course, to follow through the words of that song, I'm meeting many beautiful people here. And for that, I thank you for the opportunity to be with you. And I thank you for the key to the to your city, which is the key to many good qualities that we would like for our own country. Innovation, tolerance, multiculturalism, courage, the courage to try out new ways and new things, the courage to welcome those of a different way of life and to give them an opportunity to live among you without having to let go of their own values. This is what I think is most precious about this city, that you are open-hearted and open-minded. We need both. Closed minds and open hearts do not really go together. Some may claim that they are open-hearted, but if they close their minds to the needs of others, how could their hearts be said to be open? But you have opened your hearts to our people in their time of need, and I hope the time will come when we can repay you for this tremendous love and tremendous generosity. Our country is now on the verge of a new path. I have to keep reminding people that we are just about to start out, that we are not yet along the way. And because we are just at the beginning, this is a delicate and difficult time. I hope you will be with us as we proceed onwards from here to a point where we can say thank you to our friends for having put us firmly on the territory of human rights and democracy. That time has not yet come. We are trying to get there, and we have been given the opportunity to get there. Many of our people who have settled in the United States or who are here temporarily waiting for the time when they can go back to their own country have acquired new skills and new understandings, which we hope will be of great benefit to our country now in the present, not just in the future. Because the most important time is the present. This does not mean that we must forget the past. We must remember the past that we may learn lessons from it. And we always have to have our eyes clearly focused towards the future, even as we deal with the present and its difficulties and problems. We look to our people all over the world, for it is not just in the United States that I have found our people. I have found them all over the world. We look to our people from all over the world to help us in our transition to a genuinely democratic society. There are many things that we have to learn. And let me remind our people who wish to come back to help us that there are many things they have to learn too. An important ingredient in the time of transition is humility. We all need it. As we proceed towards a new the future, we have to understand what our weaknesses are. We have to understand that we need to acquire many more qualities to enable us to build a strong and peaceful society. Burma is a nation of many ethnic nationalities. It has always been the aspiration of the people of my nation to live together in peace and in prosperity. This has not yet been possible. The fires of conflict have not all died out in my country. It is for us to do everything we can to make sure not only that those fires die out, but the fuel that will lead to future fires is demolished as well. In this, we must learn to reach across to one another. I would like to say to all of our ethnic nationalities, including the Burmese, who are, of course, the greatest, the biggest majority, always to think first of what has been lacking in us rather than in others. So instead of trying to find the cause of conflict within other communities, please first look to your own community. So I would say to the Burmese, look to yourself and examine what you have done or not done to promote peace and prosperity in your country, in our country. Similarly, I would like to say to all nationalities and communities in Burma to look first to themselves, to see how they can improve themselves, that they might contribute to a stronger, more united, happier, healthier nation. In this, we look to our friends abroad, and especially to our friends in San Francisco, to teach us how to live in harmony with different cultures, with different religions, with different points of view. This is what I think our people here have most to learn from this beautiful city.
After receiving her honorary doctorate degree, Suu Kyi addressed the crowd and responded to questions in a mix of English and Burmese. Let's listen in again.
How can we intellectual groups from outside Burma participate in your effort for democratization of our homeland and promotion of the living standards of the society? Can we expect to see clear rules and regulations fully encouraging Myanmar intellects to give back for the society?
Let me just answer this in Burmese. I will add a cautionary note. If you really want to help our country, I think it's important to adopt a sense of humility. The term intellectual, of course, as it suggests, encompasses a lot of educated people. To begin with, if you want to help the Burmese people, you have to think of yourself as if you're on the same level as average Burmese people. You are at a better station in life, probably because you have been given opportunities that most Burmese people have received. I hope you will take that into consideration. I'm not directing my comments directly at the person who raised the question, but I have seen a lot of the same attitudes in a lot of people. So I just wanted to say that if you come and help the Burmese people with the attitude that we know more than you because we know better, we have come back to help you. If that's the case, reconsider. The Burmese people are not talentless and are not unskilled, but many of them haven't been given the sufficient opportunities that they would have liked to have learned and improved themselves. If you'd like to come and help, please contact the young Burmese people and let them know. A lot of people say, let us know what we can do for you, but I would like to flip the question and ask you what it is that you can do for us.
Can you offer your opinions on historic Panglong Agreement? Do you think our country is a real union? Do you accept that our country was born out of the Panglong Agreement? Why ethnic minorities in our country have taken arms against successive government? Do you think these ethnic minorities are nasty people? Do you consider ethnic issues of our country as a serious matter? If yes, or if not, why? Well, the Panglong Agreement was signed in 1947. We are now in 2012. The National League for Democracy has been speaking of the need for a 21st century Panglong to deal with our problems now in the present, in the 21st century. So although the historic Panglong Agreement was crucial in the independence movement of our country, we'll have to expand it to include all those ethnic nationalities who were not part of the agreement then and who should be part of the agreement now. And the reason why ethnic minorities in our country have taken up arms against successive governments is the same reason why Burmese insurgents have also taken up arms against the Burmese government. It is because we have not been able to resolve our differences in a non-violent, amicable way through negotiated compromise. I have been saying again and again that Burmese culture, and I imagine the culture of other ethnic nationalities, but I would rather say Burmese because I'm not as familiar with the values of other ethnic nationalities. Certainly, Burmese culture is weak when it comes to promoting the qualities that give rise to negotiated compromise. This is something we have to practice consciously. It won't just happen. And if we can learn to settle our differences through negotiation, through dialogue, through compromise, and not think that compromise is a humiliation, then I think we'll go a long way towards achieving ethnic harmony throughout our country. Of course, ethnic issues are a serious matter because our ethnic nationalities are a big and integral part of our union.
What are your plans for helping engage the young NLT members? Another person asked.
What I do is give them training and give them responsibilities. I talk to them about how to conduct themselves. Training itself is not enough. We give lessons about conflict resolution, but also the young people need to be given a chance to learn how to practice the lessons they've learned. When I asked students how they would implement conflict resolutions, they didn't have good answers. We have to give them opportunities to employ the lessons they have learned in their trainings. To be frank, I have to tell you that our country's education system is poor. Anyone who is under 55, I would argue, is suffering from a legacy of a poor education system. This is something that needs a remedy and something we are working towards.
What are the plans to improve the education system in Burma, especially in rural areas where people cannot afford to go to school? Someone asked.
I think there are two things we have to do. One, because we are in a parliament and we are lawmakers, we have to change the law. The second is that we have to focus on pragmatic ideas. In 2010, after I was freed, I founded an organization that establishes a lot of free educational institutions. I noticed that when you remove the fee requirement, there are a lot of students that actually do come to school. This is when I realized that it is actually the cost of education that is preventing people from going to school. For the people overseas who would like to help, you can help by helping our free educational institutions. Think of the young people, an entire generation that has been educated under a system that is imperfect. In my own township, I'm establishing a trade school in a small area where we have a permit. My hope is that early next year, I'd be able to launch my trade school. The aim of a trade school is to teach students the ideas of travel and hospitality skills so they could become employees in the upcoming tourism industry that I'm expecting Burma to enjoy.
Establishing a democratic rule of law in the country which has endured 50 years of military martial law and still does not have a democratic constitution seems an impossible task. Do you foresee problems? Will there be a day when all Burmese currently living abroad can visit the homeland as easily as we can visit all other countries? Well, I believe during the Second World War, in one military establishment in England, they had this motto on the wall: we achieve the impossible every day, miracles take a little longer. So I think we'll have to go by that motto and say that also, though it might seem impossible to establish rule of law in a country like ours, we will be able to achieve it. We are fully confident because we believe in it and because we have been given many opportunities in the legislature to be able to do this. As perhaps you are aware, I'm now the chair of the Committee for Rule of Law and Tranquility. And yes, people always laugh when I say that, and I don't think it's that impossible to achieve both rule of law and tranquility. There will be problems, of course, but problems are there to be overcome. And about all Burmese living abroad being able to visit their homeland easily, I think it's getting easier from day to day. It's not as easy for everybody as it might be for some, but I think the time will come when our people will be able to visit their homeland whenever they wish to.
Da Aung San Suu Kyi was even questioned about her perspective on the Pussy Riot case, in which members of the band were imprisoned after a concert in Moscow. Someone asked, in a country with old-fashioned values like Burma, what would you say about groups like Pussy Riot who are fighting for freedom?
My belief is that everybody should have human rights, even if we cannot help people. If they are struggling towards freedom of human rights and of expression, then I would encourage them. We don't discriminate against different groups of people who are fighting for human rights. Our circumstances may be different, but we don't think about our own fight for freedom as a more noble cause. If we really want to eliminate the division of people of the world, then we can't say we'll help this group, but not that one. If we do that, our world will become smaller and smaller until we are on our own.
A lot of people are saying that they're going to come back and save Burma. What would you like to say to them?
There is a Buddhist saying that I am reminded of. Saints don't usually brag about their work, so if you are saying that you are going to be the savior of Burma, isn't that the same as bragging about what you can do? If you think of yourself as a savior of Burma, please don't come back with that attitude. If you're coming back, come back with the intent to work together with the Burmese people for the good of the country.
Who will help to build the infrastructure, funds for development, and Myanmar from overseas? How can we help building Myanmar to develop democratic country? Well, everybody will have to help with regard to infrastructure and funds. We will be receiving the necessary funds from some donor countries, from some international organizations, but we also hope that our people who are now prospering overseas will do whatever they can to help us back home. Of course, the important thing is to help through the right channels, And for that, you must study the situation carefully and make certain that you are helping through the right channels and not just helping some groups and organizations to prosper without real benefit for the country.
Do you have advisors? One person asked.
I have many, many advisors. Some who are advising from close by and some from very far away. I listen to the advice that's offered and discuss it with others. I don't take all the advice that is offered to me. And of course, there are people that criticize us if we don't take their advice. This is something that is quite common in politics. We always have to judge the suitability of the advice offered to us by the circumstances and by the timing. Please remember, for any politician, there are no shortage of advisors.
When do we see the progress in Burma 5 to 10 years from now? Well, I don't think we can wait for 5 to 10 years. We'd better start seeing progress in 1 or 2 years. Because our people are in great need. Of course, we can't progress in all directions at once. But I think we should be able to see visible progress within a year or two, even if in small ways. For example, as I was speaking earlier about the vocational training programs that we're trying to implement, these should surely help the lives of our young people within about a year or two. But they will, of course, to begin with, be on a rather small scale. And for the economy to take on the kind of momentum that will turn us into a more affluent society, it will take a bit longer. And of course, we mustn't forget the need for political reforms and political progress.
On one occasion, a member of the crowd suggested that, quote, a country as bad as Burma doesn't deserve to have a leader as good as the Aung San Suu Kyi, unquote. In response, she said this.
I don't think I am better than my country. I am, after all, spawned from the same Burmese people. I have my own weaknesses and flaws, but we all share the same faith.
When asked to articulate the difference between opportunities and responsibility and speculate on the root cause of disunity in Burma, Aung San Suu Kyi said this.
The root cause of disunity is often envy and jealousy and a lack of self-confidence. So I want to encourage the Burmese people to actually think about that. Examine this issue on your own. When you are gauging yourself, you need to be honest. Think about who you hate, for instance. Isn't there a sense of fear that is driving your hatred? Is it because you think that person can injure you or do better than you? If the answer is that you are jealous of someone else because of your own weaknesses, then you'll have to work on your own weaknesses to improve yourself. A lot of people want opportunity, but don't want to take responsibility. A lot of people talk about the opportunity that comes with democracy, but very few people talk about the responsibility that comes with democracy. I always like to remind people that it's important to remember that you need to take the responsibility to ensure that the opportunity that comes with democracy continues to exist. Think about the elections, for example. If you don't vote, just because you're lazy, or because you don't believe, or because it doesn't interest you, if you surrender your right to vote, if other people submit their vote and elect a person that you don't like, then you have to take responsibility for that. If you don't perform your responsibility, then you lose your opportunity as well. In the long run, if you're always motivated by the desire for opportunities, but lack a willingness to shoulder the responsibility, then you could very quickly lose your opportunities.
What should be done about the situation in Arakan State? Do you think Rohingyas deserve to be citizens of Burma? If not, why? Now, this is a very hot issue these days, and everybody has been asking me about what is going on in the Rakhine State. I think you have to understand that human rights violations are going on on both sides of the communal divide. And this is what we have to put a stop to first. With regard to citizenship, we have to consider it from the point of view of rule of law. Rule of law meaning, what are the citizenship laws, and are the citizenship laws been applied justly in the Rakhine state? And if these citizenship laws are in line with international standards, these are what we have to consider. If we make citizenship an emotive issue, it will not help to bring about harmony in the Rakhine state. So please look at it clearly from the point of view of what the laws of citizenship are and whether or not these laws are acceptable. As I understand it, the immigration minister said recently that all those who have lived for two generations in Rakhine, in Burma, will be eligible for citizenship. So what you have to now question is whether this is actually been acted upon, whether the pronouncement of the immigration minister has been acted upon. And secondly, whether or not this can be considered an acceptable citizenship law in line with international standards.
In terms of remedies for overcoming hatred and fear, Aung San Suu Kyi said this.
I always tell people that hatred is born out of fear. Usually when you hate somebody, it is because you fear that there is something that this person can do to injure you. I don't think hatred can exist without fear. You have to tackle the root of the problem. The root of the problem is to be free of fear. You have to confront your own fear. Ask yourself what it is you're afraid of, what you're worried about. You have to bolster a sense of confidence. In the end, overcoming fear and hatred are things that you have to do on your own. If our education system can teach students methods to overcome fear and hatred, it will do them very good. Of course, you cannot eliminate fear and hatred completely. Because after all, these are human characteristics. But we can certainly work toward reducing the amount of fear and hatred that we have.
Another person in the crowd asked Aung San Suu Kyi to name the last book that she read and asked her to offer some advice to the younger generation about books that they should be reading.
When I'm traveling, I always carry poetry books because poems are short. When I have time, I open up to a page and read a verse or two. The book I brought with me on this trip is called Poetry for the Days, so I can read one poem a day. Maybe because I'm growing older, I'm growing fonder of poetry. The beauty of poetry is that not only can you read what is intended by the poet, you can also add new meanings or add your own interpretation. Poetry transcends religion, culture, and race.
Aung San Suu Kyi shuffled through the bowl of questions to make sure that the final one she would answer would be in Burmese. And again, she reminded the mostly Burmese crowd not to forget the language of their roots. The last question she answered was about how she passed her time when she was on house arrest for nearly 15 years.
When I was on house arrest, I had a lot of time to read. I had a lot of time to meditate. I had a lot of time to be disciplined and lead a healthy life, and I listened to radio hours on end. In fact, I felt like when I was under house arrest and listening to the radio, I began to have a better idea of what was happening around the world. If I'm speaking to someone in person outside, I have a lot of distractions. When I'm listening to the radio, I can listen to the intonation and tone. I feel like I begin to understand the attitude, the personality, and the mentality a lot. I suppose that is one of the benefits of being in isolation under house arrest. What you do with your circumstances, how you use your time, that is completely up to you. Whatever your circumstances, make the best of the time and the opportunities that come with it.
We just heard a piece of Burmese leader Aung San Suu Kyi's question and answer session from her visit to USF earlier this fall.